Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 for Sci-Fi and Scream.
In the year 1987, at the John F. Kennedy Space Center, NASA launched the last of America's deep space probes. The payload perched on the nose cone of the Massey rocket was a one-man exploration vessel, Ranger 3. Aboard this compact starship, a lone astronaut, Captain William Buck Rogers, was to experience cosmic forces beyond all comprehension. An awesome rush with death. In the wink of an eye, his life support systems were frozen by temperatures beyond imagination. Ranger 3 was blown out of its planned trajectory into an orbit 1,000 times more vast. An orbit which was to return the ship full circle to its point of origin, its mother Earth, not in 5 months, but in 500 years. For 500 years, Buck Rogers drifted through a world in which reality and fantasy merged into a timeless dream.
Far beyond the world I've known, far beyond my time. What am I? Who am I? What will I be? Where am I going? And what will I see? Searching my mind for some truths to reveal. What thoughts are fantasy? What memories reel?
Wait a minute.
How dare you?
We must examine for science.
No, not on your life.
This is Sonia here at the Ridges Hotel, and we have Erin Gray, probably best known to most of our listeners as the one and only Colonel Wilma Deering from Buck Rogers in the 21st Century. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sonia. It's lovely to be here.
Down under again. Like you mentioned during the Q&A that we just had about an hour ago or so, you did mention your career starting off going to Hollywood and breaking into it, which you found quite challenging, I should imagine, back in the day. Just from a woman's point of view, how do you compare it to now? I mean, you mentioned someone like the wonderful Felicia Day, of course. How do you see the changes?
I think the biggest change I'm seeing is that women are getting stronger roles and or becoming leads of series, and they're not always the object on a gentleman's arm or a sexual object. So I think we're just as society is embracing women in higher positions in corporations and as scientists, as doctors, and so on, I think we're starting to see that reflection in our filmmaking. But I still think that we have a ways to go.
Definitely. And you yourself, with your client base, do you notice in your business that you do, apart from your conventions and meeting fans, do you find an increase of more women on your books, so to speak?
Don't think. I've got a pretty good balance between men and women, although I do note a lot. Can't remember, just on the plane, for example, you know, they list 15 movies, let's say, and the first seven, there wasn't one picture of a woman. And I thought that was interesting. They're all action pictures or whatever. And then maybe the eighth film was The Call with Halle Berry or something. But I thought We're still not seeing it completely, you know. And I'm always pointing it out to my husband. I'll see a film, and I'm going, okay, there are 15 men, and there's one woman, and she's either the hooker or, you know, somebody's mother or something. I mean, even Batman, I adore Michael Hughlin, the executive producer, but I pointed out to him, I said, you know, there's only two women in the entire film. Not this most recent one, but the one before with... the one that was married to Tom Cruise.
Oh, yes. Dawson's Creek.
Okay.
She's so forgettable already. That's terrible.
That's terrible, yes. Yeah. No, she's lovely and a lovely actress, but, you know, and she had the main female role, and then there was one other female, and it was a drunk socialite in a crowd scene.
Yeah.
That was it in an entire movie.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I watch action films with my husband, but I'm kind of tired of them. Mm. You know, I like more the Iron Man, where, you know, you've got some wonderful female characters.
Gwyneth Paltrow does so
oh,
well.
She's so fabulous. She's great.
Very,
you know,
confident and,
yes, and
very
funny
strong,
and strong.
But quirky.
And yet beautiful and attractive and sexy and all of the things, you know. But I do see that disparity in films, that there's still not enough female characters. And it's interesting to me that, however, in the 40s, you had more women in lead roles than you had men. What happened? You know, you had the Jane Russells and the Marilyn Monroes, and they were the major stars, and it seemed like somewhere around the 60s and 70s, when we got into more the gritty action films, you lost that, the storytelling aspect of movies. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I would have put it more post-World War II, when the men returned from the war. Perhaps they felt usurped a little bit. Women were having roles and more work, making guns and armaments. I mean, you know, during the Second World War. But afterwards, they wanted that back, and maybe some of those upcoming producers and filmmakers, I'm just guessing.
I would actually like to look at the number of films that were made from the 30s, 40s, and 50s and see if there was that shift that I remember as a child growing up, seeing films with more women in lead roles, the Betty Davises. These are the women that I looked up to as actresses, and there aren't that many. There was a period of time, from I would say in the 60s and 70s and 80s, where there weren't that many women carrying films, you know.
Not enough going through film school, perhaps? Not enough in those sort of more leading roles?
Oh, no, there were lots of actresses wanting jobs.
Yeah.
No, they
weren't
writing them. The studios weren't producing them.
Yeah.
They didn't think it would sell.
It's still a bit like that, even with comics and that whole crossover. I mean, we had Joss Whedon do The Avengers, which was a fantastic piece of comic culture going to the big screen, but he only chose one female superhero.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I thought he did a wonderful job in Firefly.
Yeah,
in
Buffy,
in
Firefly. Yeah.
It was
fantastic.
Fabulous, fabulous female characters, all of them. But then why Avengers? I don't know. A good question. You know, only one female role in that, yeah.
But speaking, getting back to something our listeners would love to know, and because you are incredibly a very strong role model and very sexy, of course, Buck Rogers in 21st Century. Everybody knows those outfits.
Right.
Did you have any sort of feelings like, what am I doing wearing this? Is this what my character is about, really? Or did you get a chance to build on that a little bit more and add, you know, more character to her, not just the outfits?
You know, I had no problem with the outfits. I'm actually the perfect person for the role, because I'd come from a modeling background, and so I was used to the fact that, you know, people like to see attractive women in sexy outfits, and I actually had no problem with it whatsoever, especially since she was a commanding officer and in charge. I mean, you know, deal with it, you know, deal with my sexuality and deal with my intelligence and deal with my strength. So it was good. The only problem I had was maybe walking off the set and walking to the commissary. I'd put on a bathrobe, because women didn't walk the streets wearing
like that,
skimpy outfits. I mean, years later, when Jane Fonda's aerobics classes became popular, women felt it was okay to walk the streets in their leotards and tights.
Spandex,
yeah. I think there are a lot of women who shouldn't, but I thought it was fun.
Bombs, yeah.
The only problem I had was they were a little tight. And you didn't see Colonel Wilma Deering sitting down very often, or, I couldn't. It was just too tight.
Right. You know, sewn in, is that right? You had to be
not quite sewn in, but you know, I don't know how many women remember girdles, but I do, and it was like wearing a girdle from head to toe.
Very similar to Michelle Pfeiffer, what I guess she had to do with when she was Catwoman back in Tim Burton's.
But with my time period, however, spandex was a new fabric, and it didn't have much give to it. It didn't have the expanse to it. It was very rigid.
Misnamed, I think. Huh? Sounds like it was misnamed.
Yes.
Non-spandex or something, unspandex. Well, that's brilliant. Look, it is great to talk to you. You definitely are one of the sci-fi historical icon figures from the past and into the future. It would be great to see Buck Rogers kickstarted, perhaps like Battlestar Galactica did.
I would love it, and I would love the chance to play that character again and have somebody expand more on that character, because I never felt, I mean, I was a supporting character. It was Buck Rogers, and the storylines went through his character primarily, not mine. So I would love it to have that opportunity. So we'll see what.
Yeah. Well, it was a great chemistry between the two of you. It certainly showed, and it was empowering as well. So thank you very much for being part of our growing up history and everything.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, Erin.
Hi, this is Erin Gray from Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Beautiful. Perfect.
That's great. That's fun to do. Love that stuff. Give me those.
Oh, yay. Great.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream.
Sci-Fi and Scream, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Join us.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.